For the Climate Discussion Nexus, I'm John Robson. With the latest readout video from our free Wednesday Wake Up email newsletter, and a shout out to the people of Christchurch, New Zealand, one of many lands we have never visited and very much wish to, who occupy the 24th spot in our all-time views by city list. Followed by a shout of terror to Gorham, Illinois, ground zero for a windstorm so mind-bogglingly deadly that all doubts about climate change must surely be blown away. But it was not the hellish Hurricane Helene. Instead, without wishing to distract anyone currently trying to outrun a T-Rex, we want to mention Cody Cassidy's gripping How to Survive History, subtitled How to Outrun a Tyrannosaurus, Escape Pompeii, Get Off the Titanic, and Survive the Rest of History's Deadliest Catastrophes, which ends with the off-the-scale, 300-mile-per-hour wind, town-leveling, locomotive-hurling, tri-state tornado of... Wait, what's this? March 18th, 1925? Yes, indeed. Nearly a century ago. And you'd better run, or better yet, hide, especially if you're one of those people who says the weather is so obviously way worse today than ever in the past that the science is settled. Cassidy's book is a delight to read if you don't mind things like the Chicxulub asteroid impact raining blazing glass-like rock chunks down on all the Earth's forests at over 100 miles per hour at the end of the Cretaceous. But it won't convince you that climate was benign until recently, including this tornado, which evidently masked its own approach because it was so huge and ferocious that it looked more like a rainstorm until you heard its unearthly shriek, quote, that one witness later describes as a whistling siren-like death song, end quote. While on average, tornadoes last for under 10 minutes, Tri-State lasted over 3.5 hours and traveled 219 miles across, hence the name, three states. Both of those figures are all-time records. And then it smashed into Gorham at 73 miles per hour, which is more than twice the average and, yes folks, quote, the fastest in recorded history, end quote. As Cassidy goes on to note, on the enhanced Fujita scale, a maximum EF5 designation signifies sustained wind velocities of at least 200 miles per hour, which fewer than 1% of tornadoes ever reach. But, quote, at its height, Tri-State's winds exceeded 300 miles per hour, end quote. It literally hurled 100-ton locomotives into the air, and it killed, quote, at least 695 people, double the death toll of the second deadliest tornado in American history, end quote. Which isn't that surprising once you learn that it could drive a plank 16 inches into a tree. And, for good measure, one of the phenomena that contributed to birthing this monster was a swerving jet stream. Yes, before climate change. Though we don't have to tell you what the zealots would say if anything of this sort happened today. Oh, by the way, if you're unable to escape a tornado, it's crucial to protect yourself from flying debris, including by being a pothead, as in using the stoutest pot or pan that you can find as a helmet. And if you are trying to outrun a T-Rex, which admittedly is less likely, the trick apparently is not to sprint, but to turn frequently and hope it lumbers on past and gets bored. There, with those practical tips out of the way, we return to Tony Heller's observation, back in January of this year, that Arctic sea ice was at its highest level for January 9th in 20 years, with no downward trend in the minimum since 2006. This comment caused a firestorm that bid fair to accomplish what nature and humans could not, and turn the North Pole into a sauna. An army of trolls rushed out onto the floes, and someone even made an entire video on what fools we were, based on their misunderstanding of a trivial and quickly corrected error in one chart. But as we said at the time, what really matters is what the ice does. And as it turns the annual corner from its seasonal melt low point, Susan Crockford now observes that the latest NSIDC number, quote, now makes 18 years of near-zero trend in September sea ice, which demolishes the claim that more CO2 means less sea ice, end quote. And for some reason, this lack of disaster makes the zealots mad. Ah, and from the You Asked For It file, the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency did an online Climate Week quiz on X asking, quote, true or false, humans are the dominant cause of climate change, end quote, and the result was 9.9% said true and 90.1% said false. How dare they? And from the blah, 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 blah file, Canada's jet-setting Prime Minister X's out that, quote, at UNGA 79, PM Trudeau met with the President of the EU Commission, Ursula von der Leyen. They exchanged views on pressing geopolitical issues and discussed fighting climate change through industrial decarbonization and the clean energy transition, end quote. Let us guess, they're for it. So much so that they have to fly to meetings to praise it. And it's chronic. The Manhattan Contrarian complains that during Climate Week in New York, as well as the aforementioned 79th meeting of the UN General Assembly, quote, New York Governor Kathy Hochul showed up to deliver what she probably thought was a significant policy speech, end quote, in which, quote, the gov went on and on about how in New York the energy transition is really happening and is going to create zillions of green jobs. We're not talking about some transition happening in the future. We're talking about it unfolding right now, and that's what we're so excited about. And I go to these job sites all the time, and I want to see more women and people of color and the unions recognize this, end quote. Alas, the contrarian adds, quote, The Wall Street Journal has a front page article today with headline and subheadline, America's ambitious climate plan is faltering, global emissions are at records, while shift away from fossil fuels slows amid high costs, surging power demand, end quote. But keep on with the verbiage and the selfies, because there must be a pony here somewhere. And here's how much the elite cares about climate change and the steps we have to take to fight it. The Hollywood Reporter sneers, quote, Hollywood can't ditch its Teslas fast enough. They're destroying their leases and walking away, end quote. And why? Because, duh, quote, as Musk has continued his trajectory into the megaverse, pledging allegiance to right-wing conspiracies, amplifying racist and anti-Semitic messages, disparaging trans people, including his own daughter, and endorsing Donald Trump, his stock in Hollywood and that of his brand has plummeted, end quote. So, the cars were about increasing emissions of virtue signals, not increasing those of CO2? Well, of course, darling. Meanwhile, Euronews.Green tries to be chipper about, quote, slower planes and contrail coordination. New report lays out five-year plan to cut aviation impacts, end quote. But it's no-go. The issue is that, quote, current policies leave the aviation industry seriously off track in meeting its climate pledges, end quote. Exactly. Like so many corporations that bought the hype, including from their perky younger staff, and said they would do the stuff that physics said they wouldn't, it turns out that they can't. On the plus side, in our ongoing quest to explore strange new worlds of climate sanity, we want to seek out new nuclear plants and new applications. For instance, Matthew Zeitlin on Heatmap trumpets that, quote, Microsoft's mega deal is a massive victory for nuclear power, end quote. Yes, it is. And also for common sense. And that's important because in the newsletter we note that climate policy and climate science are necessarily joined closely together. But there are good and bad ways of making the connection. And the worst of them is to tweak the science to say what policymakers want to hear. How we chuckle these days at the way some earlier societies supposedly subordinated freedom of inquiry to religious dogma and political whim. But the insistence on a drastic policy response to human greenhouse gas emissions ought to be driven by a sense of certainty that something bad is happening or is about to, not by science twisted to say it is, whether the data justify it or not. And on that score, as Roger Pilkey Jr. wrote recently, quote, The importance of baselines for expected change came to mind over the weekend when I came across this unvarnished misinformation from an oft-quoted climate scientist, the changing impacts of climate change, and in particular from more extreme weather events such as wildfires, floods, heat waves, more intense hurricanes, are actually in many respects exceeding the predictions made just a decade ago, end quote. If true, it clearly mandates immediate action. Politicians for some reason want it to be true, and certainly most of them believe that it's true. But, as Pilkey Jr. adds, it's not true. It is flatly contradicted by what we really know about recent weather trends and by the degree of uncertainty involved, a crucial and vastly underappreciated aspect of the whole issue. And now for our weekly cheerful chart. Lately, the esteemed website Our World in Data has been getting more and more obnoxious in their alarmist climate commentary. And while the numbers illustrating actual human progress amid the rhetorical gloom are still there if you know where to look, we do foresee a day when the data are gone, lest you see it and start engaging in thought crime, and all you get are headlines like, quote, low-carbon technologies need far less mining than fossil fuels, end quote. But, for now, we can still find our way to happy things like this week's ninth installment of our cheerful charts, which shows rates of child labor over the years. For most of human history, kids had to work to help fend off immediate starvation, whatever toll that labor took on them in the long run or even right away. But, as you can see from this chart, the fraction of children toiling in the workplace has fallen steadily, especially in developed countries. Though we do still wish we could get them to clean their rooms. Now, here's something surprisingly cool. There's been a lot of discussion lately about a new study which reconstructs global average temperatures over the past 485 million years. And yes, we love it when people take a historical approach. And this new study has surprised many people because it shows that we're in an unusually cold era. Though if you'd purchased your CDN mug showing climate change over the past half billion years, you'd already have seen the deep blue patch at the end, indicating the relative coolness of the interval that we now inhabit. Our reconstruction does have at least one colder era in the distant past, and so does the new one. And both show that for about the last 250 million years, the world was warmer, but has gradually been getting cooler. The new study nevertheless bravely, or brazenly, tries to maintain that despite all the cooling, CO2 is driving the climate, except for roughly 200 million years during the Mesozoic when it didn't. Their reconstruction looks like this, and the red arrow, which we added, shows the you are here spot, such as you find on those maps in the shopping mall where you still wonder where you are. And according to the color codes along the top, the late Paleozoic, that's the pre-dinosaur era, was cooler about 300 to 350 million years ago, and then it warmed steadily until the Cenozoic began 50 million years ago, and it's been downhill ever since. Another version of the graph, from the same study, plots that temperature against a CO2 reconstruction with temperature as the top line. And what stands out here is that while the two lines do move together during the Paleozoic, they diverge during the Mesozoic, and then they move together again in the Cenozoic. Which means that CO2 is not the main climate driver, because if it were, there wouldn't be a nearly 200 million year hiatus where they don't track each other. And it's also worth noting that, even where they do track each other, the authors don't show whether temperature moves first or something else causes both to change. Correlation famously is not causation, and the long Mesozoic gap shows a lack even of correlation. So naturally, they insist that they proved it exists. Meanwhile, grab your chopsticks, because from the CO2science.org archive, there's a summary of how rice responds to more CO2. And it's just what you'd expect for this vital food crop. So, that's more good news. For the Climate Discussion Nexus, I'm John Robson, and I am very grateful not to be ducking flying locomotives. That's right.